Hello and a very warm welcome to the EMG Health Podcast. This is your host, Dr. Jonathan Sakia, and you're listening to our final episode in a fascinating five-part podcast series on atopic dermatitis. This series has been sponsored by an educational grant from Sanofi Genzyme and Regeneron, in which the views and discussion might not represent the position or endorsement of either company. We've been exploring recent developments within the moderate to severe atopic dermatitis field, so please do review our archives to listen to the four previous podcasts, each featuring notable experts sharing their knowledge and perspective. In this, our final episode of the series, we will discuss advancements in the treatment of moderate to severe atopic dermatitis, nuances of treatment options, long-term strategies, and how this impacts people's everyday life. To help me explore this topic, I'm delighted to be joined by one of the top and most highly respected dermatologist experts in the field of atopic dermatitis, Dr. Stefan Weidinger, Professor for Dermatogenetics at the Christian Albrechts University, as well as Vice Head of the Department of Dermatology at the University Hospital in Schleswig-Holstein, Germany. Stefan is a passionate skier, but since moving from Munich to Kiel 10 years ago, he discovered water sports, and he now loves to sail and surf with his kids. Well, we're thrilled to have the good professor with us to ensure we have a smooth sail through this topic. Welcome to the podcast, Professor Weidinger.
Hello, Jonathan.
Kicking off, the past few years have brought changes to our understanding and treatment of atopic dermatitis. How would you characterize the impact of atopic dermatitis on patients and their families in terms of symptoms, quality of life, and overall disease burden?
Well, Jonathan, atopic dermatitis is a very complex and demanding disease. You mentioned symptoms, but there are also signs, and together they have an impact on quality of life and make up a huge part of the overall disease burden. AD puts an enormous burden not only on the patients, but also on their families and caregivers. It is also a huge challenge to those supporting the patients with the management of their disease, including physicians and nurses, for example. The reason is that the disease typically starts already very early in life, and then for many patients is a lifelong problem that accompanies them for years and decades. The disease causes visible eczema lesions on the one hand, and on the other hand, intense itch that in turn often leads to sleep disturbances. It has a fluctuating and unpredictable course, which means that patients never know in which shape they will be on the next day or even in the next hour. And it requires constant topical treatment, which is often messy and time-consuming and also costly. Patients, and especially children, may feel singled out for being different for all these reasons. And this is exacerbated when the disease limits important activities, for example, sports. And that stigmatization then can also lead to the avoidance of certain social situations and can even disrupt friendships. And finally, as I said, the disruption of sleep and also the disease flares then may even cause absence from work or school. So AD is a disease that really impacts every aspect of life to a varying degree, of course, during life, but it is always there. And it really confers a huge burden.
Yeah, you know, I've used the term, Stefan, that there's the disease, the pathophysiology, if you will, and then there's the dis-ease, the way that an illness affects people. And as I've learned about this subject from your colleagues in the prior podcasts, it really struck me how awful this must be to live with. So thank you for characterizing that. I mean, that's true, isn't it? It's a pretty tough disease to live with.
It is, definitely.
And also your comment about the family members. You know, I imagine having a child who's not sleeping and crying, it must be really, really tough. And, you know, again, from back when I was in medical school many moons ago to now, the knowledge about the pathophysiology of atopic dermatitis has improved dramatically in recent decades. Can you describe how our understanding is shaping the ability to develop treatments and thereby treat patients more effectively?
Well, we still don't know exactly what causes atopic dermatitis, but it is believed that, genes on the one hand and environmental factors on the other hand play a role. And in the past years, we have been able to, identify some of these factors, which are now further investigated for the development of new therapies. And thanks to huge and luckily continued efforts in, clinical and molecular research, we now also much better understand the mechanisms that drive skin dryness, skin inflammation, and itch, and also the mechanisms that make patients more susceptible to develop comorbidities, in particular asthma and, allergic rhinitis. What we know is that, on the one hand, patients have alterations in their skin barrier that make the skin more sensitive and which allow substances, antigens, allergens, pathogens from the environment to invade into the skin more easily. And on the other hand, the immune system is, very sensitive and can react to even the smallest allergens and irritants. And this reaction then causes excess inflammation underneath the skin and can also facilitate the development of allergies that in the end may cause symptoms elsewhere in the body, in the lungs, for example. Although we still do not fully understand the, complex network of events and molecular pathways that are involved, we now at least know some of the key molecules which are produced in excess, and we can target and specifically block these molecules with very modern therapies without impacting other parts of the immune system. And that makes these new therapies not only very effective, but at the same time very safe, which of course is, very important.
Right. So one of your colleagues had mentioned that dermatology was seeing immunology in action, and, that certainly seems to be the case with this disease. So given all the dramatic changes in understanding and treatments, how has your treatment approach to patients with moderate to severe atopic dermatitis changed over recent years? And what do you currently use to help those patients more severely affected?
My treatment approach has really changed over the years. So there's now increased understanding that it's not sufficient to only reactively treat flares, but to proactively treat so as to avoid flares, and that it's also important to control the disease, in particular in, the more severely affected patients who you mentioned, also to avoid negative long-term consequences and maybe even the development of comorbidities. And this often means that specific anti-inflammatory treatments have to be used proactively, as we say, and that in patients who are more severely affected, systemic treatments may have to be added in time. One of the new targeted drugs for systemic treatment that I just mentioned is already available, and many others are on, the horizon. Also, some older drugs may be good choices if they are used in the right way and for limited periods of time. That means that it has to be carefully checked, and I and my residents always do that, if a patient's disease is really sufficiently kept under control with stringently done topical therapies and all, the measures we do. And if this is not the case, then systemics should be considered in addition. And when developing an individual patient's management strategy and, starting systemic treatment, it's also important to agree with the patient on treatment goals and targets, and then repeatedly check if with the current treatment these targets are reached. If this is not the case, then the treatment has to be changed.
So I understand that you recently joined a steering committee for a survey that looked at ways in which providers could improve the quality of atopic dermatitis care and the resulting changes in quality of life. What were the findings of this survey, and what are some actionable ways providers can help improve gaps in care?
So this atopic dermatitis quality of care initiative that you mentioned was a global initiative that, involved many experts and renowned eczema centers. And its aims were to develop a kind of globally represented view of AD care and to create a kind of repository of good practice inventions and their implementation. The approach of the initiative was to catalog and analyze and then finally report on the one hand the challenges to AD care and on the other hand good practice implementations that were found and that can address those challenges, and to disseminate this information so that the standard of AD care can be elevated by all practitioners worldwide. And in fact, I had a dual role in this initiative. I was, and I still am, part of the steering committee of this initiative, but at the same time, my own center was also visited and evaluated, along with many other centers. And we found many good practice examples, some of which were to some extent overarching and then deemed high priority by the steering group. And these were, on the one hand, accurate and complete diagnosis and severity assessment, which is really important in AD. Then a kind of coordinated and structured multidisciplinary care team, which is something we implemented here in our center, ideally with a kind of primary point of contact for the patients within the team that functions as a kind of communication hub and brings together all the findings, then good patient education and communication measures. That can be easy. It can mean simply dedicating sufficient time within consultation, but it can also mean leaflets and maybe even eczema schools, which is something we offer in our center. And finally, a good and close collaboration and exchange with patient groups. But as I said, there were many, many other good examples. And the report of the initiative is publicly available via the internet. So for those who are interested, they can download the report and read it and hopefully find some inspiration and some measures they may want to implement at their centers.
Well, that's great. Well, thanks for that. As a chronic disease, moderate to severe atopic dermatitis typically requires long-term treatment. However, continuous long-term use of many treatments aren't recommended due to a lack of either efficacy data or potential safety risks. Which treatment or treatments have clinical evidence showing a favorable benefit-risk profile for these patients? And what are the black box warnings associated with certain emerging treatments?
Jonathan, you're right. So many patients really need a good long-term strategy. So many patients that come to my center, for example, they have a lifelong history of disease. And it's unlikely that the disease will resolve by itself. So what we need to find is a good strategy for long-term treatment. And as I said before, there's already one very innovative targeted treatment available, which can be used for long-term treatment. It's a biologic that targets the receptor for two key molecules that drive the disease, or at least many features of the disease, namely IL-4 and IL-13. And this drug is called dupilumab. The efficacy of this drug, of dupilumab, and its very high safety, very good safety, has been demonstrated in many, many trials. And in the meantime, also by real-life studies, I myself am one of the PIs of the German AD registry, and we have a lot of data also coming from the registry, which show that this drug is really very efficient and very safe under real-life conditions. So it's a good choice for long-term treatment. But other biologics targeting other single pro-inflammatory mediators will also become available soon and will probably be good and safe alternatives. And then there is a second group of new drugs which are orally available, and these substances inhibit several pathways at a time. So that means they are somewhat broader than the biologics like dupilumab in their mode of action. They are called JAK inhibitors. The JAK inhibitors are already being used for a number of other inflammatory diseases such as arthritis, and the first JAK inhibitor is already licensed for atopic dermatitis, and at least two others will become available soon. In particular, these second generation JAK inhibitors appear to have truly excellent and rapid efficacy in AD. But at the same time, they may cause some side effects and require lab monitoring and may not be suited for every patient. However, I would say for the right patient and under the auspices of a good physician, they are excellent treatment options and will be another valuable addition to our armamentarium.
Well, I'm going to come back to the JAK inhibitors in a few seconds, but how has the addition of dupilumab changed your practice and the lives of your patients, especially for patients who may be failing when it comes to topical and the historical therapies?
So the introduction of dupilumab, the first biologic for AD, has changed my practice quite a lot because I now have an innovative, efficacious, and safe therapy to offer also for severely affected patients and for long-term treatment, from which the vast majority of severely affected patients benefit. Many patients with difficult-to-treat atopic dermatitis and a decades history of disease, and as you said, multiple previous therapies have found relief through this biologic. And as I mentioned, the prospects are good because there are many more great new therapies to come. So to me, that means that I can now more or less promise also my severely affected patients that sooner or later, we definitely will get the disease under control with rather little risk, and that they have an excellent chance for a largely normal life.
So I want to go back to the comments you made about dupilumab, which and it targets interleukin 4 and 13. Does that translate into a different side effect profile compared with traditional immunosuppressants? And what do you say to your patients? How do you counsel them when prescribing dupilumab?
Yeah, so in the absence of good and targeted systemic drugs, in the past, we had to use traditional immunosuppressants that were mostly not developed specifically for AD. Thanks to the fact that dupilumab now specifically and only targets signaling through two mediators, IL-4 and IL-13, that are key in atopic dermatitis and important also in other atopic diseases, that means has a narrow mode of action without suppressing other parts of the immune systems like the traditional immunosuppressants do. It is, I would say, super safe. And this is very different from the conventional immunosuppressants, which may have wide effects on the immune system and therefore also a range of potential side effects and toxicities. I mean, with sufficient experience and for the right patient, it is fully legitimate to use them, and they can be a really good option for some patients. But on the other hand, with dupilumab, there is now an alternative, which is at least as efficient than the older immunosuppressants, and at the same time, very safe, with no risk for severe toxicities, at least to our current knowledge, and no lab monitoring required. What might occur during dupilumab therapy are ocular side effects, mainly conjunctivitis, which may be messy, but which is usually not dangerous and can well be managed, and most often then resolves, at least with the right treatment, and very rarely leads to discontinuation of the therapy. There might also be injection site reactions, like it is the case for other biologics that are applied subcutaneously. But these reactions, which are transient swelling and erythema, itch and pain around the site of injection, are usually not a major issue. And of course, I have to say, although dupilumab is a very potent therapy, not each and every patient benefits to a sufficient extent. Most do, but not necessarily every patient. But as I said, we will soon have alternatives if needed. But to sum up, dupilumab is really a major advance and has initiated a new era of therapy in AD because it's efficient and it's super safe and it's suited for long-term treatment. And this is what we need for many of our patients.
Thank you, Stefan, for a very clear and cogent explanation. And again, maybe because I'm not the brightest bulb in the chandelier, as they say, I want to circle back. By the way, I love the name of this new class of drug, Janus kinase, JAK inhibitors. Apparently that originally stood for just another kinase, which amused me. So some newer ones are being developed. How do they differ from biologics? How does the safety profile of dupilumab compare with those new drugs, these emerging JAK inhibitors? I know you touched on it previously, but I'd like to drill down a bit further.
Yeah, so the Janus kinases are intracellular molecules that are important for signaling. They translate signals from receptors on the cell surface into reactions of the cell, I would say. And they act in pairs. So two Janus kinases are involved at every cytokine receptor. If you block one or two of these Janus kinases, you block a bundle of receptors, so of cytokine receptors or signaling through these receptors. So you have a broader mode of inhibition as compared to biologics, which block only a single mediator or receptor. That may have advantages on the one hand, because we know AD is a heterogeneous disease, and although it's dominated by type 2 mechanisms and molecules like IL-4 and IL-13, there is also some activation of other immune axes. On the other hand, by this broader mode of action, you may at the same time buy more side effects and potential toxicities. So the JAK inhibitors, at least from what we see from trials, are very efficacious, but at the same time, they require careful lab monitoring, which is something we certainly can do, but it's a difference. And there is a number of side effects that may occur. These are all side effects we usually can handle, but it's a difference to dupilumab, which is really super safe. And there is not too much to say about side effects apart from the things I already mentioned, the ocular side effects. So we will have to see then in the future which patient or patient subgroup benefits more from which treatment. But overall, I'm very happy with having biologics available for AD and dupilumab because, as I said, they are very efficient. Most patients benefit from these therapies. And at the same time, there's little risk, little side effects. They're an option for long-term management. For the JAK inhibitors, although overall the short-term safety profile is good and it seems that we can handle it, there are some questions also with regard to long-term safety, and we will have to see over the years how well they are suited for long-term management.
Yeah, it's an interesting, as you were explaining, it's a juxtaposition, isn't it? Because anytime you deliver a treatment that requires the patient come back for regular monitoring, I'm thinking of anticoagulation, for instance, You have to balance the patient's willingness to come back, their ability to come back. I'm thinking, obviously, with atopic dermatitis, the symptom set is so strong and powerful that they're going to want the disease control. But I guess those are things that clinicians like you have to balance, right?
Exactly. It's always the risk-benefit ratio. And as I said before, it also depends a bit on the patient's treatment goals and preferences. So for me, as a clinician, it's great to have this one new option at the moment and to get other options in the future. So yes, as you said, so this decision on risks and benefit has to be made in every patient.
So dupilumab is recommended for the treatment of patients aged 6 years and older. So what treatments and studies are available for infants and younger children who have atopic dermatitis?
Yeah, so for small infants and children, and as I said before, very often the disease shows an onset already in these early years. Very often these infants and children are really severely affected and suffer a lot. Unfortunately, there is no good and approved systemic treatment available at the moment. The only thing we can do if all other measures, for example, topical therapies and educational measures and so on, fail, is the off-label use of immunosuppressants and in some instances also dupilumab. But trials with dupilumab on infants and younger children are ongoing and close to be finished. And from what I hear so far, dupilumab seems to work very nicely and safely also in this very young age group. And so we all hope that it gets approved soon and that we have a good option also for this patient group. And I expect that also many of the other new treatments will be studied in young children, but this will require some time. I'm confident that in the near future, in the end, we will have good therapies also to offer to severely affected infants. And who knows, maybe timely disease control at this vulnerable age also from an immunological point of view might also modify the disease course and maybe even prevent comorbidities.
Yeah, wouldn't that be wonderful? So
I
sense, Stefan, that we'll have to have you back to discuss that when those results are in the public domain. I also know that there's been a published case series on the off-label use of dupilumab in a pediatric population. Are you able to share those results with us?
Yes. So as I said, dupilumab is not yet approved for the very young age group, but it is already being used off-label in many centers. Also in my center, I have few kids that I below the age of six that I have been able to treat with dupilumab with special permission from the payers. And what I can say and what has been shown in this case series that it's super safe. That's the most important thing, in particular in this age group, and that it works nicely. They're probably the dosage and the application intervals will be different. That's also something that is the case already in children above the age of six. But overall, it's very safe and it works nicely. So I'm very confident that this will also be shown more formally by the trials and will lead to the approval of dupilumab for this age group.
Fantastic. Thank you. So our relationship across medicine with patients is changing to become more collaborative. How have you incorporated shared decision-making, especially with pediatric patients and their families in your practice?
Yeah, so with the new therapies that are increasingly becoming available and that differ a bit from each other, it will be even more important to involve the patient in decision-making. So what we did here in our center, we made video clips which inform patients on general aspects. So for example, what's the difference between getting a treatment under routine conditions or participating in a trial? What's the difference between immunosuppressants and biologics? What about the JAK inhibitors? And patients can watch this video, which supports them in making a decision. We also carefully assess, do a holistic assessment of the patient to see what symptoms are most relevant to the patient, in which aspects of daily life the patients are most impaired. And then we discuss with the patient about treatment goals. So what's in the foreground for the patients? Is it more the itch? Is it the signs? Is the patient longing for treatment that works rapidly, or is safety the more relevant aspect? Then in the end, we try to agree on the treatment, on the treatment goals, and then together, from time to time, we check if we reach these goals. So I think this is quite important, because I always say if patient is not happy with a treatment decision and is not confident and has no trust, so doesn't like treatment that is being applied, it has lower chances to work. This is also a psychological aspect. And it's very important. And the more you involve the patient, the better the treatment will work and the happier the patient will be. And it may mean having to invest a bit more time at some consultations, but it will pay off.
Well, I would suggest that the dividends it pays in terms of patient satisfaction, and frankly, probably less time over the course of treatment, because you're not having patients.
Exactly. Back,
because they're invested in the decisions made. And, you know, as a surgeon, I certainly, you know, getting someone to agree to be paralyzed naked on a cold metal slab surrounded by strangers with knives, it was always, you want people to really buy into what you're going to do with them rather than to them.
Yeah, exactly, Jonathan. You mentioned the Quality of Care Initiative before, and this was something we have seen at several centers, also my own center, that they dedicate more time, especially for new patients during the first consultations. And this is a kind of investment, because if you better understand the individual needs and the overall clinical situation in a given patient and build trust, then this will pay off later. And this is something we experience here. So later consultations often take only a few minutes.
Yeah.
Because the patients are well informed about their disease. They trust us. And so it's a good investment.
Just like everything you said, it all makes perfect sense. And it's very clear that atopic dermatitis treatment's undergoing revolutionary changes and entering a new era aiming to improve outcomes and quality of life. Treating patients with moderate to severe atopic dermatitis with dupilumab and other systemic agents, communicating long-term safety and efficacy data to patients, is obviously also a priority. Patients with atopic dermatitis are more willing to adhere to treatment, as we've heard, and they achieve better outcomes when there's shared decision-making between the clinician, patient, and family. I want to thank our guest, Professor Stefan Weidinger, for all the work you do for patients with this very tough disease, with atopic dermatitis. And thank you also for taking the time to come onto the podcast today to show your expert perspectives on this matter. Thank you, Stefan.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
So patient education and shared decision-making are essential to clinical care. High-quality research, and then, as we've said, sharing findings helps spread the news, leading to better quality of life, fewer adverse events, reduced disease burden, improved long-term outcomes, and frankly, also improved physician satisfaction with the practice of medicine. Thank you to you, our audience, for listening to today's episode and showing a commitment to lifelong learning. This has been the final part of this five-part series on the subject of atopic dermatitis, and just want to repeat the reminder, the prior episodes are archived, so give them a listen. And please come back for future episodes of the EMG Health Podcast. Stay safe, stay well, stay curious. Bye for now.